Hello, this is Lance from the Crawl Space Media Network. I really hope you're enjoying one of our fine programs right now. While I have your ear, I want to tell you about another quality show on the network. It's called Pi Rational Stories, and it's our first fictional podcast. There is a space between reality and fantasy, between rational and irrational. In this space, there are stories. Stories of obsession and the dark side of human nature, of love and despair, and glimmers of hope. These are anthology-style stories narrated by the finest voices in the industry and written in a dark corner of the universe. So if you like well-told tales, listen and subscribe to Pi Rational Stories. That's Pi_Rational Stories on Spotify, Apple, or your preferred listening app. And now, back to the program.
You're listening to the Mind Over Murder podcast.
My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a writer, consulting producer, and now podcaster. I am now trying to use my experience as the brother of a murder victim to help other victims of violent crime. I'm working on a book on the unsolved Colonial Parkway murders, and I'm the co-administrator of the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook group, together with Kristen Dilley.
My name is Kristen Dilley. I'm a writer, a researcher, a teacher, and a victim's advocate, as well as the social media manager and co-administrator for the Colonial Parkway Murders Facebook page with my partner in crime, Bill Thomas. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
That makes me Bill Thomas.
And we are so thrilled to start this episode by bringing you the news that Durham Jane Doe has been fully funded for DNA testing at Othram Labs. With the help of our listeners, $2,500 toward DNA testing was raised in the case of Durham Jane Doe. And Durham PD ultimately matched those funds so that now she is fully funded and testing can move forward in her case.
Very exciting. Typical turnaround is 8 to 12 weeks at Othram. Remember, they're doing this incredible full genome sequencing, which they're calling forensic grade genome sequencing, which is literally the best DNA testing in the country now. It does take some time, but hopefully we might have results maybe before the end of the year.
Sounds good. We will look forward to giving you all an update on that when those results do come in.
And speaking of our friends at Othram Labs, they've just announced that they're working on another case that we've followed for a number of years, and that is the disappearance of Brianna Maitland in 2004 in Vermont. So the Vermont State Police have selected Othram to do advanced forensic testing in the disappearance and likely homicide of Brianna Maitland. She was a beautiful 17-year-old girl who disappeared back in 2004. Her car was found abandoned about a mile from where her place of employment was. She worked at an inn. There have been a lot of rumors about this case over the years. Brianna disappeared. Obviously, they looked at guys she had dated, and they looked at her fellow employees at the Black Lantern Inn. The car was found abandoned next to a barn, parked in a very odd configuration. This is a full-size Oldsmobile, kind of old-school big four-door sedan, which my guess is she may have acquired from mom and dad. Her parents have been devastated by this loss and have been pushing very hard for a number of years. Her father, Bruce Maitland, is an incredible advocate for missing and murdered people and actually established the organization Private Investigations for the Missing. An incredibly impressive guy, and her parents are desperate for information here. We're very excited that Vermont State Police have selected Othram, and these tests hopefully will be conducted shortly. This is again a situation where you can make a financial contribution at dnasolves.com. That's their website. And also, that will give you directions on how you can contribute your DNA data to dnasolves.com, which is used exclusively by law enforcement and for no other purpose. The whole thing is completely free. And this would be in addition to, hopefully, all of us sharing our DNA on the GEDmatch.com website, as well as DNASolves.com. This allows law enforcement to search, and this is how these cases are being solved through the use of forensic genealogy.
We look forward to digging into the Brianna Maitland case in future episodes. In the meantime, please enjoy this episode with retired Detective Thomas Holsinger from Henrico Police Department. Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll see you next time. Welcome to Mind Over Murder. I'm Kristen Dilley.
And I'm Bill Thomas.
And we are thrilled to be bringing you part two of our interview with retired detective Thomas Holsinger of the Henrico Police Department to talk about the Donna Hall and Mike Margaret murder case.
Detective Holsinger gets into some very interesting issues in this podcast. We think he's offering some insights that have never been offered before publicly. We strongly urge you to listen to the first part of this interview with Thomas Holsinger, which would be our episode 36, before you listen to this current episode, because otherwise you're literally walking into the middle of a fascinating conversation, but you may be more than a little bit lost. So please, if you haven't listened to episode 36, listen to that one first and then this one.
We hope you enjoy this episode of Mind Over Murder. Thanks for listening. We have a lot of people both on our Facebook page for Colonial Parkway Murders and on the Donna Hall Mike Margaret Facebook page who posit that there is a connection between our cases. Did you hear that theory when you came on board, and what do you think of it?
No, I didn't hear it initially, but later on I did hear that theory. I knew a little bit about the Colonial Parkway murders. I really hadn't dived too much into it, but I knew a little bit about it. I'm glad you brought that up, because with Donna and Mike, it's always been robbery was the motive. Based on the things that we knew that were going on with them at the time, she had a large amount of money. They were trying to hook up with some drugs, and they were putting themselves out there, and ultimately they became a victim. The little bit that I know about the Colonial Parkway murders, it could be more of a serial type situation where people didn't put themselves out there. They just became a true victim of somebody who was a predator. But with Mike and Donna, we always have known robbery was the motive. And one thing I've learned over all the years working murders and stuff, murder is pretty simple. Don't try to think too much into it. If you think too much into it, you're going to confuse yourself. Keep it simple and you're going to find out what happened. With Mike and Donna going out looking to purchase drugs, having the money, there's only a small circle they're going to be in, and somebody took advantage of it. It's no secret that both Mike and Donna had a lot of Benadryl in their system, probably like 6 times, I think it was, or something. And so whoever it was able to take advantage of them. Donna did not have any defensive wounds on her. Mike struggled. And so, you know, but with the Colonial Parkway murders, and Bill, you certainly know it, this is more, I think, of a predator kind of looking.
There was never any sign of the money. We're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars that Donna and Mike had on them that evening.
Yes, no, the money was gone. They had the money earlier in the night. One of the things we probably didn't talk to you too much about earlier was, you know, you had two kids from two different high schools, and they both had their own set of friends. And on that Friday night when they were together, the first part of that night, they were all with Mike's friends, which would be the Tucker High School group. And then they left that group, and you would think that they went to see Donna's friends, which they were going to do. So you had the Freeman High School group that they probably were going to see. And one of the things I learned from this case initially, which I had no idea about, was, you know, you would have thought, I always thought that maybe Mike was the one who was dealing more drugs than Donna, and Donna just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, it's quite the opposite. It's actually Donna was the one doing more of the transaction stuff, and probably Mike was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
So Donna was the one who put herself out there in terms of making a potential drug deal and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And this idea we've talked about, this whole connection to the Grateful Dead and that sort of thing, is that a possibility? I mean, there was talk about Donna and Mike going on the road with the Grateful Dead, which many young people did back then, and that maybe the purchase and sale of these drugs was to further that plan? Does that make any sense?
It's a possibility. You know, back then, the Grateful Dead was certainly followed pretty heavily by people using drugs. So it all kind of went hand in hand. I will say that Mike had just started a job with Dominion. I don't know if it was called VEPCO then, Dominion Power or so forth.
Right.
And that was a pretty good job. You know, he landed a job with them, and that's one of those jobs you land and you spend your whole career in and you have a nice retirement. And I would imagine that I know that his good friend Ronnie had certainly hooked him up with that job and so forth. So I don't know if Mike would have sacrificed that job to go follow the Dead.
Right. So that could have been wishful thinking on Donna's part or other people's.
Right. And that could be completely possible with Donna. I think she was kind of a wild child.
Yeah, we've heard free spirit and and expressions like that. That was very much part of the culture 36 years ago.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, when Jim Dort was doing some of his interviews, some of the people he wanted to interview that were in these drug circles took off and did follow the Dead. And some of their family members had enough resources that they could go out on the road and follow them for months at end. And, you know, and they had to track down those people that were on the road.
Donna and Mike were not from the kind of families that would have underwritten a summer fall tour following the Grateful Dead. Am I correct?
Mike's family, no. Mike came from a pretty stable family and so forth. Donna, her family was pretty dysfunctional.
So even Mike's new job might have precluded him going away for weeks at a time.
I would say that. You know, for being right out of high school and landing a job with Virginia Power back in that day was probably a pretty good accomplishment. And he had some friends there that had fathers there that actually pulled strings probably to get him in there. I don't see Mike packing up and leaving such a good job to do that. But you know, you never know with kids.
I know that when Bill and I talked about this yesterday, I was a little surprised by it. We had originally said in our reporting that Donna and Mike had Demerol in their system. You said that it was Benadryl in their system. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, you're right, and I was wrong. It, now that you brought it up, I said Benadryl, but it was actually Demerol that was in their system.
Okay,
got it. Regarding Demerol, where would someone get Demerol in 1984?
You know, the Demerol, that was another aspect of the case. Back in the 80s, you had a lot of mom and pop pharmacies that were around the West End of Henrico. You know, there's sketchy things going on with a lot of these mom and pop pharmacies. And then you had some of these people working in the pharmacies. You know, nowadays pharmacies are a lot more managed closely, and you know, you have pharmacy techs that are trained. There's different things where back in the day, I think it was kind of loose and free.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the local pharmacies had actually been penalized for lack of controls, is what we understand.
Yeah, that's kind of happened through the years where some of these mom and pop pharmacies were caught doing things they shouldn't have been doing through DEA regulations and different things and investigations. And yeah. And so again, talking to a bunch of people, some of these people were working in those pharmacies.
So there were thefts and drug dealing in some cases, illegal behavior actually through these smaller mom and pop pharmacies?
Yes.
Wow.
And my understanding was Demerol was not that hard to get your hand on back then.
I know we had been curious about, we know what it's used for, you know, surgically, it's like a narcotic, but we weren't sure how you would use it recreationally. Was it a party drug? Was it like, what would it have been used for and who would have been using it? Can you shed light on any of that?
Not really. I didn't know, you know, back in the 80s what form it came in. I don't know if it came in a liquid or a pill or both. I just knew that in certain areas over there in Henrico, you know, you could get hold of that kind of stuff. And a lot of A lot of it also was delivered. You know, there was a lot of deliveries of drugs and so forth to the elderly, and just talking with people and stuff that, you know, if they were getting 100 pills or they were getting 90 pills or something like that, they never knew if 4 or 5 came up missing.
Oh, and right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Where your local delivery driver was skimming a few pills off the top. And if he had, you know, 10 or 20 people he was delivering to at night and they were all in their 80s or 90s, they never knew. And he walked away with a handful.
Mm-hmm. Now, the potential drug deal that Donna and Mike might have been involved in, the thinking was that that might have been a cocaine deal. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well.
And we're talking about she might have had as much as $5,000 on her that evening?
That's correct.
As we've talked about, I mean, that's a lot of money now, and it was a really a lot of money back then to be...
Sure. You know, in 1984, with an 18-year-old or 19-year-old having that much money and looking to buy drugs, you know, first of all, you got to find somebody who had that much back then. So you're moving up the distribution ladder. You know, you're not going to your regular guy that can give you, you know, an 8-ball or something like that. You're looking for a lot.
It almost sounds like Donna and Mike might have got in over their heads in terms of the kind of people they were dealing with.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
So you mentioned in the last podcast episode, you mentioned Eric English, the new Henrico Police Department chief. Have you met Chief English?
I don't know him personally. I've certainly been in meetings where he was there. He was the deputy chief for Richmond City for a long time. And Henrico and Richmond police worked really close together. And obviously the homicide units worked really close. A lot of my good friends are current and former Richmond homicide detectives. And I didn't know him personally, but nothing but good things about him, I've heard and seen.
Right. So his reputation is good.
Absolutely.
And if he invited you to come back in and brief him, and I know Joe Scheel, your former partner, is still there, would that be a likely outcome? Or
Sure. Yeah, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
And back when Chief Carnell was chief, Henrico had found the funding to do the private lab testing that you were lobbying for.
Yes, that was one of the things that Chief Cardinal, you know, that was not a sticking point with him. He obviously went to Freeman. He knew Mike and Donna, and even the county manager, who was John Patulkis. He is a Tucker graduate that was a friend of mine back at Tucker, and he would be completely supportive of trying to get this case solved.
Well, when I think about the tens of thousands of man hours that have gone into this case so far, yours and Jim Dorton's and Joe Shields and so many other people, I think a few $1,000s more to put this thing to bed where you'd finally have a prosecutable case would be pretty exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And even past Jim Dorton, there was other detectives. Even in the early 2000s, there was cold case detectives that looked at it then. So the case is really, this particular case has really never sat on a, if you want to use the word, sat on a shelf and collected dust. There has been, you know, other detectives took other avenues and so forth. And I guess, you know, it was one of those that when I got involved with it, I knew everybody. And that was one of the things that helped me.
You had mentioned that your partner grew up elsewhere in the country. So on some level, it was helpful to have the two of you work together because he had the fresh perspective and you actually, you know, knew all the people and the places and a lot of what was going on back then.
Yes. And then, of course, having that criminal analyst and her being involved with the case from the get-go as well was great.
You're listening to Mind Over Murder. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors. One of the most frequent questions we're asked here at Mind Over Murder is, how can I help?
Thanks to Othram, a leading forensic DNA testing lab for law enforcement, you can get involved and help solve real cases.
If you have tested at a consumer genetics company, you can contribute your data to DNASolves.com. The process is easy and confidential, just two simple steps. Your DNA might be the missing piece that helps solve the identity of an unknown person.
Then Mind Over Murder will highlight cases Othram is working on to seek your crowdfunding support for DNA testing to help solve these cold cases.
Upload your DNA profile to DNASolves.com. It's easy, free, and confidential.
Then join Mind Over Murder as we help families find answers with Othram and DNASolves.com. In these stressful times, everyone needs some time to chill out and relax. That's why we're excited to announce this week's sponsor, Boston Green Health.
Boston Green Health is a local provider of CBD products that specializes in oils, topicals, gummies, and edibles. Boston Green Health's plant-based products can provide natural relief and rest for the mind, body, and soul.
As one of New England's premier hemp-based companies, they offer a variety of all-natural CBD products that use a blend of locally sourced hemp extract.
Visit bostongreenhealth.com for premium CBD oil, a delicious variety of CBD-infused gummies, luxurious handcrafted topicals, and a product line for pets.
Mind Over Murder listeners can receive 20% off any purchase by using show code MOM20.
Boston Green Health takes pride in being New England's most trusted CBD brand.
Visit bostongreenhealth.com and use show code MOM20 for 20% off any purchase.
We're back here at Mind Over Murder. Tell us a little bit about the success you had, that you and Joe Scheel had working together in cold case homicides.
Well, I was assigned to it for 3 years in with Joe, and we solved about 6 homicides in that 3 years there, which was great. It was up until that point. I think every now and then people would solve one, but we did have a lot of success. We ended up getting 3. Some of them that kind of go back that I think about was one guy had murdered his wife back in 1981. Again, I was a freshman at Tucker High School with his daughter, stepdaughter.
Wow.
And he killed his wife and put her in a closet, and they didn't find her for about 4 or 5 days, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wow.
Oh, man.
That's harsh.
He went on the run from 1981, and then Joe and I were sitting at our desk. I think it was 2016 by now. And the guy from Social Security calls and says, "Hey, do you want Earl McFarlane?" And I was like, "Who is this? And what kind of prank are you playing on me?" and he says, "I'm so-and-so from Social Security." Social Security has federal agents. And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "What do you mean, Earl McFarlane?" And he said, "He just popped up on the grid. He's in Greensboro, North Carolina, and he just applied for his Social Security benefits."
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's how they figured out where he was?
And he would have been in his late 70s. And I was thinking, what? So Joe and I go to Greensboro, and we're watching this house, and it's an old lady that has the house. And I look at Joe and I'm like, he's dying. He's in there dying right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking that's the only reason he would apply for his Social Security. He was under the radar like you wouldn't believe
right.
from 1981. So after not seeing him for 3 days, we just said, let's just walk up to the door, knock on the door. So we went up to the door, knocked on the door, and this old woman came to the door, and I said, "Where's Earl McFarlane?" She said, "He's in the back dying of bone cancer."
Oh, gosh. It was exactly what you thought.
Yep. And he was back there, and he was so fragile. I just put him in the car, interviewed him. He told me the whole story of killing his wife, and he said, "I knew you guys were coming."
Mm-hmm.
"And the only reason I applied for Social Security is this woman has been so nice to take care of me for umpteen months, I knew I could give her the money because he got paid his back pay or whatever from Social Security, and he gave it all to her.
Interesting. Wow.
So we got him back to Henrico. We ran it through the court system real quick. He pled, and I think he lived 2 months in the Virginia Department of Corrections, and he died.
Wow.
And that was a big one. And then we had a guy named Crazy Mike who was a serial killer.
Oh, God.
And he had killed people all around the country. We had a murder on our train yard and was unsolved. And when the detectives interviewed him in California, he confessed to killing a guy in Richmond on the train yard. Mm-hmm. Henrico flew out there and interviewed him. And he certainly had details that were only known to the killer.
Right.
And so brought him back and he pled. He's doing life.
And that's one of those things where, was he known to this man that he killed or?
No, there are people that just ride the rails.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually had a couple homicides down on the rail yard, and he was never on our radar. We did have an odd thing. We did have a cardboard box that they were living out of down there that he had scribbled his initials and his nickname all over, Crazy Mike. And so we did have all that, but we didn't know who that was.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the detectives in California did a great job in interviewing him and having him talk about that. So
what does that feel like to close out cases that have stretched on for 30, close to 40 years? What does that feel like to finally put all that together?
It's a great feeling. It's and you get to know the family members and they actually become like part of your family. And It's a great feeling to come to a conclusion with that. And some things it's kind of odd. So the guy who killed his wife, and she had 7 children, and they didn't have any children together. So when I reached out to them to tell them, you know, hey, I think I'm gonna be able to lay my hands on Earl McFarlane, some of the family members were upset with me.
Why? And, why would they be upset?
I still to this day don't know. Maybe a psychiatrist can tell me. But they were so upset over that situation where other family members were unbelievably excited. Yeah, and even to the point where we went to trial, some family members wouldn't even talk to me.
I don't understand. It seems...
Yeah.
I personally push back on the idea of closure. I'm not real comfortable with that word. But if somebody else achieves some measure of peace because of the hard work that you and all of the people on your team over the years have put in, I think that's incredible. I'm lost as to why they'd be upset.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was because, you know, they were stepdaughters and they really liked this guy, and they thought this guy would never have done something like that to their mother. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah. Well, 2 things come to mind. One is that one, which is, gee, we really liked him and we had an image of him as a good person, and now that is also destroyed, and they had already lost their mom. And then the other thought that came to me listening to you tell the story was, it obviously brings back a lot of that pain. In other words, these people would be adults now, but they lost their mom to a brutal murder. And, you know,
right.
you bringing that forward and identifying a perpetrator also brings back some of the floodgates of the loss.
Right. And that's kind of what I left it thinking was, yes, I was bringing back this pain, and they had already gotten over it after all these years.
Yeah. Is it hard to put these things down, you know, at the end of the day, or, you know, now you're doing other things in law enforcement? Is it hard to put these cases aside when you're sitting there quietly by yourself?
During the days go different. Like I said, some days I got involved, you know, take Mike and Donna's case. I would get involved with talking to people and finding different routes to go into. And before I knew it, it was 9 o'clock at night, you know, and I hadn't eaten or anything. And I was kind of like, oh, my God, I got to go eat something. Yes, it was kind of hard to put something like that. Other days where you really weren't finding something, you know, you got out of there and did other things.
Mm-hmm. And does that clear your head? And I mean, what do you do when you're not being a law enforcement officer? I guess we should ask. what do you like to do when you're not solving cold cases?
Well, I was the only one in the unit that didn't play golf, so I don't play golf. And they play golf all the time, and I used to laugh and say the only reason you guys keep me in this unit is because I don't play golf, because they would all come in and say, "Hey, we're all going to play golf today. You're working day shift and evening shift."
Oh, great. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. But then whenever I wanted time off, I never had a problem getting time off. It was like, oh yeah, let him go.
And so what do you like to do when you're not, solving cold cases?
I'm always, cutting grass, doing something outside, exerting energy, I guess. Before COVID, I guess I traveled a little bit.
We hope to get back to that someday.
Absolutely. But yeah, the job really, it wears on you. It's a young man's game. Probably, people say, oh, the police, they can retire at age 50 or something like that. Yeah, but, up until then, you're pretty, during my course of being a homicide investigator, I went through a divorce and different things like that. So, it wears on you.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's funny because when you and I were talking the other day, I was asking you about a number of people that have worked this case over the years. And thankfully, they're all still with us. In other words, they might be doing other things, but they haven't passed on. And the truth is, it's funny, we're talking about you and Kristen introduces you as retired, but you're actually still mid-career.
Yeah, I've retired from the state work and I've got a state retirement and I moved on to a private institution and I'm still doing criminal law enforcement work, but it's a lot less stress and it's actually a lot of fun. And I don't lay in bed at night with thinking of things.
And did that happen when you were working homicides?
Oh yeah. Nobody gets killed between 8 and 4.
No, it's always always in the middle of the night, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. You just hope that either came early or it came later at night. I hated to get into that REM sleep and I used to not go to bed till probably midnight or something like that. And if something came in at 1 o'clock, it was like, I'd just gotten into a nice sleep. And so you were hoping that something came in maybe at 4 or 5 in the morning or something, but or early, like at 11 o'clock at night or something.
Right. Right. Well, it's funny. I managed rock and roll bands for years, and even we used to say nothing good happens between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.
No, right. And then, you get called out, and it's nothing that you're there for a half hour, an hour. You're there for a while. I can remember one case where I got called out at like midnight, and I don't think I went to bed for 2 days later. And,
oh, gosh.
In that 2 days, I was in Charlotte. I was in Orlando because whenever they run, you had to go. And this person took off after they did what they did. And we were tracking them. And yeah, I ended up driving to Charlotte, catching a flight to Orlando. And about 3 days later, I got back to Richmond and just crashed. And that was a good thing with your supervision. They knew, hey, don't bother him for the next 24, 48 hours.
Well, you hadn't gotten any sleep for a couple of days. And this is a fast breaking situation where someone's on the run and you have a good idea who you're looking for.
Yep.
I would imagine the pace on the cold cases is a little different.
Yeah, completely. You can actually take off a week and go away and go on a cruise or something like that and then come back and pick it right back up.
Right. Those files are still going to be there.
Yep.
And I was just going to say that, the amount of diligence that you, undertook, the amount of time that you took on these cold cases is just to be commended. You know, I thank you so much for your service in doing everything that you have done to make life better for Henrico and to get those cold cases solved. That's tremendous.
Well, I appreciate it. And again, it's a team effort. I know we're talking about things that I'm doing and so forth. You know, when I'm taking off and going here, going there, somebody from forensics is with me usually. And, you know, everybody else is working on it as well. And again, I can't say much that more about Henrico County. They had such good resources and such good leadership, and they just supported you 110%.
I wonder if Chief English listens to podcasts in his spare time.
I'm not sure, but I do have to call Joe, and I've got to talk about some other things. So yeah. I'll probably be meeting him pretty soon.
I like the sound of that. Where would you like to see this case, Donna Hall and Mike Margaret's case, go in the coming months? What would you like to see happen?
I would love for the evidence just to get looked at by a good forensic scientist. And I know I haven't listened to any of your podcasts, but I understand you've had some lab people involved in your stuff. And it would just be great to get this stuff finally in a lab where somebody is extracting and looking at all these bloody clothes and so forth, and to actually find something.
As you said earlier, if back in 1984 they were able to type the blood, which was, you know, that was state of the art back then, that means that blood does exist, and that third party blood, in other words, it's not Donna's, it's not Mike's, it's someone else's, that could be your perpetrator or perpetrators, I guess.
Sure. And can you imagine if they examined these clothes and they were able to develop a DNA profile of a third person, and as well as their blood type match what was found in 84? That would be it.
That would be huge. Cause for celebration.
Yeah, oh, for absolutely. Sure.
Absolutely.
So in a situation like that, would someone like you be brought back as a consultant, or is this just kind of a professional courtesy? But obviously, you know, I can tell you're still fully committed to this case and solving it.
Sure. And I go, it's not unusual for us to go back. Even when I was working cold cases, I had the old detectives come in and meet with me. And so, yeah, it would be no problem at all. I would do that in a heartbeat and would want to do that just as much as, you know, when I talked to, you know, when I was working this case, I was talking to Jim Dorton all the time. And, you know, and there wasn't anybody who wanted it solved more than him. And so, yeah.
Boy, if Jim Dorton doesn't listen to podcasts, his ears are probably buzzing by now. We've said a lot of really nice things about him.
Yeah, you ought to reach out and see if he wanted to come on.
Do you know if he still lives in Virginia, or is he, you know, living in Florida?
Yeah, he's still in the Richmond area.
Oh, he is. Okay.
He'd probably tell you I'm telling you too much.
He might. We could be asking questions like, well, does Jim Dorton golf?
Absolutely.
He probably does. Retired Detective Dorton, you can listen to podcasts while you're golfing. All you need is some earbuds, and you're good to go.
Yeah, he's a good
thank
guy.
You so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate you taking the time.
No, thanks for having me. You know, you kind of brought me back into it a little bit. You know, it's talking about it kind of brings back everything.
In a good way?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. You know, and I'm, you know, hopefully something will happen. Like I said, I was trying two avenues. One with the Facebook page and the interviews. The other one was the forensics. And if we could just get that forensics done, I would, you know, I certainly would hope that there's something on there, but just the accomplishment of having it done, if nothing was there, you could look at Scott Margaret and his sister and just say, we didn't find anything. But in my professional opinion, something's on there.
Well, it'll be an exciting day. And I think that day we'll probably read about it first on the Justice for Donna Hall and Mike Margaret Facebook page.
Yep. Yeah, that page has really, really done a lot. A lot of people loved it. Certain people hated it. They would call me and say, shut the page down, do this, do that. I'm contacting my lawyer or something. And I was like, hey, man, Facebook does what it does. we just kind of go along for the ride.
Yeah. And are some of those people that were making all that noise several years ago, are they on the short list of suspects?
They could be, or close to it.
Interesting. Because over time, it sounds like thousands of people have participated. And I think almost all of them, except for perhaps a small group, would like to see this case solved.
Yes. Yes. There's, I would say, 99.9% would want this case solved. Back then, you didn't really have a lot of murders in Henrico. It wasn't, you know, this was a whopper.
It sure was. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, thank you for having me on, and hopefully things move forward.
We hope so, too. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
That ends our two-part conversation with retired Henrico Police Department Detective Thomas Holsinger. We'll be putting aside the Donna Hall Mike Margaret case, and we hope to be returning to that case in the coming weeks with additional information as hopefully the forensic testing moves forward. That's up to the Henrico Police Department, and with a little bit of luck, we could be seeing some results in the next few months, so we'll keep you posted on that. Next week, we're going to be joined by Gemma Hoskins of The Keepers for a fascinating two-part discussion about what the status is of that investigation in Baltimore. Those of you that have seen that television series, it's an incredible television series still available on Netflix, and we urge you to watch it. We think this conversation with Gemma Hoskins should be fascinating. We look forward to seeing you on Mind Over Murder.
Mind Over Murder is a production of Absolute Zero and Another Dog Productions.
Our executive producers are Bill Thomas and Kristen Dilley.
Our logo art is by Pamela Arnois.
Our theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.
Mind Over Murder is distributed in partnership with Crawlspace Media.
You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
You can also follow our page on the Colonial Parkway Murders on Facebook.
And finally, you can follow Bill Thomas on Twitter at BillThomas56.
Thank you for listening to Mind Over Murder.